The Trouble with Peace by Joe Abercrombie, read by Stephen Pacey. Book 2 of the Age of Madness trilogy. Part 4. In times of peace, the warlike man attacks himself. Friedrich Nietzsche. The World's Wrongs.
I hope no one minds if we dispense with this for now. Orso tossed his circlet down, gold twinkling in a dusty shaft of spring sunlight as it spun around and around. Damn thing chafes, rather.
He rubbed at the sore spots it had left above his temples. There was a metaphor there somewhere. The burden of power, the weight of a crown. But his closed council had no doubt heard all that before. The moment he sat, they began to drag out their own chairs, wincing as old backs bent, grunting as old arses settled on hard wood, grumbling as old knees were eased under the tottering heaps of paper on the table.
"Where's the Surveyor General?"
someone asked, nodding at an empty chair.
"Out with his bladder!"
There was a chorus of groans.
"One can win 1,000 battles."
Lord Marshal Brint worried at that lady's ring on his little finger, gazing into the middle distance as though at an opposing army.
"But in the end, no man can defeat his own bladder."
As the youngest in the room by some 30 years, Orso ranked his bladder among his least interesting organs.
"One issue before we begin," he said.
All eyes turned towards him, apart from those of Baez down at the foot of the table. The legendary wizard continued to gaze out of the window towards the palace gardens, which were just beginning to bud.
"I am set on making a grand tour of the Union."
Also did his best to sound authoritative, regal even.
"To visit every province, every major city. When was the last time a monarch visited Starakland? Did my father ever go?"
Archlector Glockter grimaced even more than usual.
"Starakland was not considered safe, Your Majesty."
"Starakland has always been afflicted with a restless temper."
Lord Chancellor Goridetz was absently smoothing his long beard into a point, fluffing it up, then smoothing it again.
"Now more than ever."
"But I have to connect with the people."
Orso thumped the table to give it emphasis. They needed some feeling in here. Everything in the White Chamber was cold, dry, bloodless calculation.
"Show them we're all part of the same great endeavour, the same family. It's supposed to be a union, isn't it? We need to bloody unite."
Orso had never wanted to be king. He enjoyed it even less than being crown prince, if that was possible. But now that he was king, he was determined to do some good with it. Lord Chamberlain Hoff tapped at the table in limp applause.
"A wonderful idea, Your Majesty."
"Wonderful,"
echoed High Justice Bruckle, who had the conversational style of a woodpecker and a beak not dissimilar.
"Idea."
"Noble sentiments, well expressed,"
agreed Goridetz, though his appreciation did not quite reach his eyes. One old man fussed with some papers, another frowned into his wine as though something had died in it. Goridetz was still stroking his beard, but now looked as if he could taste piss.
"But,"
Orso was learning that in the closed council there was always at least one but.
"But,"
Hoff glanced to Baez, who gave permission with the slightest nod.
"It might be best to wait for a more auspicious moment, a more settled time. There are so many challenges here which require Your Majesty's attention."
The High Justice puffed out a heavy breath.
"Many challenges."
Orso delivered something between a growl and a sigh. His father had always despised the White Chamber and its hard, stark chairs, despised the hard, stark men who sat on them. He had warned also that no good was ever done in the closed council. But if not here, where? This cramped, stuffy, featureless little room was where the power lay. Are you suggesting the machinery of government would grind to a halt without me? He asked. I think you oversugar the pudding.
There are issues the monarch must be seen to attend to, said Glockter. The breakers were dealt a crippling blow in Valbec.
A hard task, well done, Your Majesty, Hoff drooled out with cloying sycophancy.
But they are far from eradicated, and those that escaped have become even more extreme in their opinions.
Disruption among the workers.
High Justice Bruckle rapidly shook his bony head.
Strikes, organizing, attacks on staff and property.
And the damn pamphlets, said Brint to a collective groan.
Damn pamphlets.
Used to think education was merely wasted on the commoners. Now I say it's a positive danger.
This bloody weaver can turn a phrase,
not to mention an obscene etching.
They incite the populace to disobedience, to disaffection.
They talk of a great change coming.
A flurry of twitches ran up the left side of Glockter's wasted face.
They blame the Open Council,
and published caricatures of them as pigs fighting over the trough.
They blame the Closed Council,
and published caricatures of them fucking each other.
They blame His Majesty,
and published caricatures of him fucking anything.
They blame the banks.
They promote the ridiculous rumour that the debt to the banking house of Valentin Bulk has crippled the state.
Gorodets trailed off, leaving the room in nervous silence. Baez finally tore his hard green eyes from the window to glare down the table.
This flood of disinformation must be stemmed.
We have destroyed a dozen presses, grated Glockter, but they build new ones, and smaller all the time. Now any fool can write and print and air their opinions.
Progress,
lamented Bruckle, rolling his eyes to the ceiling.
The breakers are like bloody moles in a garden,
growled Lord Marshal Ruxted, who had turned his chair slightly sideways on to give an impression of fearless dash.
You kill five, pour a celebratory glass, then in the morning your lawn's covered in new bloody molehills.
More irritating than my bladder,
said Brint to widespread chuckling. Glockter sucked at his empty gums with a faint squelch.
And then there are the burners.
Lunatics, snapped Hoff. This woman judge.
Shudders of distaste about the table. At the notion of such a thing as a woman, or at the notion of this particular one, it was hard to say.
I hear a mill owner was found murdered on the road to Kelm.
Gorodets gave his beard a particularly violent tug.
A pamphlet nailed to his face.
Ruxted clasped his big fists on the table.
And there was that fellow choked to death with 1,000 copies of the rule sheet he distributed to his employees.
One might almost say our approach has made matters worse, observed Orso. A memory of Malmer drifted up, legs dangling from his cage as it swung with the breeze.
Perhaps we could make some gesture. A minimum wage? Improved working conditions?
I heard a recent fire in a mill led to the deaths of 15 child workers.
It would be folly,
said Baez, his attention already back on the gardens,
to obstruct the free operation of the market.
The market serves the interests of all,
offered the Lord Chancellor.
Unprecedented, agreed the High Justice. Prosperity.
No doubt the child workers would applaud it, said Orso.
No doubt,
agreed Lord Hoff. Had they not been burnt to death?
A ladder is of no use if all the rungs are at the top, said Byers.
Orso opened his mouth to retort, but High Consul Matstringer got in first.
And we face a veritable cornucopia of adversaries overseas.
The coordinator of the Union's foreign policy had never yet failed to confuse complexity with insight.
The Gurkish may still be embroiled in all-encompassing predicaments of their own.
Byers gave a rare grunt of satisfaction at that.
But the Imperials endlessly rattle their swords on our western border, exhorting the populace of Strarakland to continued disloyalty, and the Styrians are emboldened in the east.
They are building up their navy.
Lord Admiral Krepskin roused himself for a heavy-lidded interjection.
New ships, armed with cannon, while ours rot in their docks for lack of investment.
Byers gave a familiar grunt of dissatisfaction at that.
And they are busy in the shadows, went on Matstringer, sowing discord in Westport, enticing the aldermen to sedition. Why, they have succeeded in scheduling a vote within the month, which could see the city secede from the Union.
The old men competed to display the most patriotic outrage. It was enough to make Orso want to secede from the Union himself.
Disloyalty, grumbled the High Justice. Discord.
Bloody Styrians, snarled Ruxted. Love to work in the shadows.
We can work there too, said Glockter softly, in a manner that made the hairs prickle beneath Orso's braid-heavy uniform. Some of my very best people are even now ensuring Westport's loyalty.
At least our northern border is secure, said Orso, desperate to inject some optimism.
Well,
the High Consul crushed his hopes with a prim pursing of the mouth. The politics of the Norse are always something of a cauldron. The dogman is advanced in years, infirm. No man can divine the fate of his protectorate in the event of his death. Lord Governor Brock would appear to have forged a strong bond with the new king of the Northmen, Stour Nightfall.
That has to be a good thing, said Orso.
Doubtful glances were traded across the table.
Unless their bond becomes too strong, murmured Glockter.
The young Lord Governor is popular, agreed Gorodets.
Damned, pecked the High Justice, popular.
Handsome lad, said Brint, and he's earned a warrior's reputation.
England behind him, Stour as an ally, could be a threat.
Ruxted raised his bushy brows very high.
His grandfather, lest we forget, was an infamous bloody traitor.
I will not see a man condemned for the actions of his grandfather, snapped Orso, whose own grandfathers had enjoyed mixed reputations, to say the least. Leo Danbrock risked his life fighting a duel on my behalf.
The job of your clothed council, said Glockter, is to anticipate threats to your majesty before they become threats.
After maybe too late, threw in Byers.
People are discomforted by the death of your father, said Gorodets. So young, so unexpected.
Young, unexpected.
And you, your majesty, are
despised, offered Orso.
Gorodets gave an indulgent smile.
Untried. At times like this, people yearn for stability.
Indeed, it would without doubt be a very fine thing if your majesty were,
Lord Hoff cleared his throat,
to marry.
Orso closed his eyes and pressed finger and thumb against them.
Must we?
Marriage was the last thing he wanted to discuss. He still had Savine's note in a drawer beside his bed, still looked at that brutal little line every evening, as one might pick at a scab. My answer must be no. I would ask you not to contact me again, ever. Hoff cleared his throat once more. A new king always finds himself in an uncertain position.
A king with no heir, doubly so, said Glockter.
The absence of clear succession gives a troubling impression of impermanence, observed Matt Stringer.
Perhaps with the help of Her Majesty your mother, I might draw up a list of eligible ladies, both at home and abroad.
Hoff cleared his throat yet a third time.
A new list, that is.
By all means, growled Orso, pronouncing each word with cutting precision.
Then there is Fedor Dan Wetterlant,
murmured the High Justice. Glockter's permanent grimace became even further contorted.
I hoped we might settle that matter without bothering His Majesty.
I'm bothered now, snapped Orso.
Fedor Dan Wetterlant. Didn't I play cards with him once? He lived in Adua before inheriting the family estate. His reputation here was
almost as bad as mine. Orso remembered the man. Soft face, but hard eyes, smiled too much, just like Lord Hoff, who was even now breaking out a particularly unctuous example.
I was going to say abominable, Your Majesty. He stands accused of serious crimes.
He raped a laundry woman, said Glockter,
with the assistance of his groundskeeper. When her husband demanded justice, Wetterlant murdered the man. Again, with the groundskeeper's assistance, in a tavern, in full view of 17 witnesses.
The emotionless quality of the arch-lector's grating voice only served to sicken Orso even more.
Then he had a drink. The groundskeeper poured, I believe. Bloody hell, whispered Orso.
Those are the accusations, said Matt Stringer.
Even Wetterlant scarcely disputes them, said Glockter.
His mother does, observed Gorodets.
There was a chorus of groans.
Lady Wetterlant, by the fates, what a battle axe!
Absolute harridan.
Well, I'm no admirer of hangings, said Orso, but I've seen men hanged for far less.
The groundskeeper already has been, said Glockter.
Shame, grunted Brint with heavy irony. He sounded like a real charmer.
But Wetterlant has asked for the king's justice, said Bruckle.
His mother has demanded it.
And since he has a seat on the open council, not that his arse has ever touched it, he has the right to be tried before his peers, with your majesty as the judge. We cannot refuse. But we can delay, said Glockter. The open council may not excel at much, but in delay it leads the world.
Postpone, differ, adjourn. I can wrap him up, in form and procedure, until he dies in prison. And the High Justice smiled as though that was the ideal solution.
We just deny him a hearing?
Orso was almost as disgusted by that option as by the crime itself.
Of course not, said Bruckle.
No, no, said Gorodets. We would not deny him anything.
We'd simply never give him anything, said Glockter.
Ruxted nodded.
I hardly think Fedor Dan Bloody Wetterlant or his bloody mother should be allowed to hold a dagger to the throat of the state simply because he can't control himself. He could at least lose control of himself in the absence of 17 witnesses, observed Gorodets, and there was some light laughter.
So it's not the rape or the murder we object to, asked Orso, but his being caught doing it? Hoff peered at the other councillors as though wondering whether anyone might disagree.
Well, why should I not just hear the case and judge it on its merits and settle it one way or another?
Glockter's grimace twisted still further.
Your Majesty cannot judge the case without being seen to take sides.
The old men nodded, grunted, shifted unhappily in their uncomfortable chairs.
Find Wetterland innocent, it will be nepotism and favouritism, and will strengthen the hand of those traitors, like the Breakers, who would turn the common folk against you.
But find Wetterland guilty.
Gorodets tugged unhappily at his beard, and the old men grumbled more dismay.
The nobles would see it as an affront, as an attack, as a betrayal. It would embolden those who oppose you in the open council at a time when we are trying to ensure a smooth succession.
It seems sometimes, snapped Orso, rubbing at those sore spots above his temples, that every decision I make in this chamber is between two equally bad outcomes, with the best option to make no decision at all. Hoff glanced about the table again.
Well,
it is always a bad idea, said the first of the Magi,
for a king to choose sides. Everyone nodded as though they had been treated to the most profound statement of all time. It was a wonder they did not rise and give a standing ovation. Orso was left in no doubt at which end of the table the power in the White Chamber truly lay. He remembered the look on his father's face as Baez spoke, the fear. He made one more effort to claw his way towards his best guess at the right thing.
Justice should be done, shouldn't it? Justice must be seen to be done, surely. Otherwise, well, it's not justice at all. Is it?
High Justice Bruckle bared his teeth as if in physical pain.
At this level, Your Majesty, such concepts become fluid. Justice cannot be stiff like iron, but more of a jelly. It must mould itself. About the greater concerns.
But surely at this level, at the highest level, is where justice must be at its most firm. There must be a moral bedrock. It cannot all be expediency. Exasperated, Hoff looked towards the foot of the table.
Lord Baez, perhaps you might...
The first of the Magi gave a weary sigh as he sat forward, hands clasped, regarding Orso from beneath heavy lids. The sigh of a veteran schoolmaster called on once again to explain the basics to this year's harvest of dunces.
Your Majesty, we are not here to set right all the world's wrongs.
Orso stared back at him.
What are we here for, then?
Baez neither smiled nor frowned.
To ensure that we benefit from them.